Good morning. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. This hour, we talk about what happened in Arizona and Michigan yesterday, where Mitt Romney won both states, though Michigan was close, 41% to Santorum's 38%. Is he, as some commentators are saying this morning, again, the clear front runner, or does he face problems going into next Tuesday when 10 states, count them, 10 states, it's a big super primary day, and it is next week. We have two guests with us this hour to talk about what happened in Michigan and what happened in Arizona and what's happening with President Obama as well. Rick Pluta is managing editor and Capital Bureau chief for Michigan Public Radio Network. Rick, thanks so much for being with us today.
Oh, my pleasure.
And Rodolfo Espino is assistant professor of political science at Arizona State University, specializing in racial politics, political behavior, Congress, and political methodology. Professor Espino, thank you so much for being with us. Professor, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, thanks for being with us. Some of the commentators this morning are saying, and let's start with you, Rick, that Mitt Romney is again, today now, the clear front runner. Is that a fair characterization?
I don't think that anything is really clear-cut coming out of the Michigan primary. I mean, certainly Mitt Romney survived a tough challenge from Rick Santorum, and he did have a slim lead in the votes. As a practical matter, in terms of delegates, they've split them roughly evenly. There's still some counting going on, so it's unclear whether it's going to be, a little bit more for Mitt Romney. We have what's called a hybrid primary here, where a couple of delegates were apportioned based on the statewide totals, and Romney and Santorum will each get one, and the rest of them are being apportioned by winner-take-all congressional district primaries, our own little mini Super Tuesday. And right now it's unclear whether that's going to split 8-6 for Romney or 7-7, where they split them in half. And so that means that Rick Santorum mounted a very strong challenge to Mitt Romney on his home turf. And a lot of people seem to think that that has big implications going into Super Tuesday, but especially for Ohio, where there's a whole lot of delegates at stake. It's going to be almost certainly a battleground state in November, and there's some question as to how strongly any of the candidates are going to play that.
And as late as yesterday, people were writing that Santorum may have just enough to win, and then again, maybe not. But there was a lot of analysis of why it was that Romney was struggling so in his home state and what it was about Santorum that made him almost win, and then why he didn't almost win. So let's go with why it was such a struggle for Romney in Michigan.
Oh, quite simply that Michigan Republicans tend to be quite conservative, that there are pockets, large pockets of places where religious, evangelical, socially conservative voters really dominate the Republican coalition. And those are groups of people who remained skeptical of Romney to the end. A lot of I went out and stopped at a few precincts over the course of the last couple of weeks, and just talking to people who were at least intending on voting, and there was just a lot of skepticism as to whether Romney was really a conservative. Now, there was also skepticism about Rick Santorum, but it was more about what kind of a conservative he was. And so that's what Mitt Romney had to overcome in the end. And it's probably significant that what really won it for Romney was dominating in southeast Michigan, which is metropolitan Detroit, where there's a bigger mix of Republicans and not just the social conservatives.
And was there something that Santorum said in the last week or some things that he said that stalled his momentum?
You know, there was a lot of polling focused on Michigan, and it seemed to be connected with events that, you'll remember that, roughly a month ago that, Rick Santorum came out of that trio of primaries in Colorado, Missouri, and Minnesota, very, very, very low stakes, very few people showed up, but they were still surprising wins. And so, you know, he came into Michigan with double-digit leads, supposedly. I'm always skeptical of these polls and that use robocalls and stuff like that to as their method. But still, you know, the campaigns even seem to be acting on that information. Or that kind of information, you know, double-digit leads, and then, you know, there was a surge in the other direction in favor of Mitt Romney, and then at the very end, it seemed to be moving back towards Santorum, and it was based around advertising, and yes, sometimes the things that Rick Santorum seemed to say, you could see some linkage there between what Rick Santorum said about President Obama being a snob or wanting... you know, everyone to go to college or you know, get some post-high school training.
Right.
And there was, what he said about John Kennedy's speech about separation of church and state, that he said it made him want to throw up. And so, yeah, those incidents, you know, certainly seem to raise some questions in some people's minds. Although I would submit that it was probably the advertising as much as anything that was moving voters back and forth over the last couple of weeks, just, you know, waves of voters moving in one direction and then the other direction. And I'm sure, you know, at some point in this hour, you'll also want to talk about Democratic participation
right.
in the Republican primary.
Yeah. And what about in Arizona? It was a very different situation. We haven't seen swing from one to the other. It was always Romney's, and he won it big by 47% to 27%. Why, Professor Espino?
Well, part of it was the money factor. Here in Arizona, we saw a lot more campaign ads from Romney that were anti-Santorum. Also, too, there is a Mormon connection for Romney. Arizona has a strong Mormon population, very active in politics, particularly in Republican politics. And so I think that probably contributed to Romney's landslide victory here. And you know, also, too, there was just a lot more attention given to Michigan than Arizona because of the tightness of the race. So Santorum devoted a lot more of his scant resources towards fighting in Michigan rather than here in Arizona.
Were there a lot of ads in Arizona or not?
I don't know about the comparison to Michigan. I suspect that there was more ad buys in Michigan than Arizona, but the majority of the ads that we were seeing here in Arizona were definitely pro-Romney, anti-Santorum.
And do you have any figures? You said Arizona has a large Mormon population. Do you know what percentage of the primary voters were Mormon?
No, I don't know off the top of my head. I do know that the majority of Mormon voters lean Republican, lean conservative. So they have a more active role in the Republican preference primary than they do in the Democratic or in the general election.
Mm-hmm. Is this state, would you say, up for grabs in November or not?
It's trending in that direction. I would not necessarily classify it as what you might call a tier one swing state, like Nevada, New Mexico, North Carolina, Florida might be. But because of the demographic changes, the growth of the Hispanic population here in Arizona and increased efforts to get Hispanics registered to vote in the wake of the passage of some anti-immigrant legislation, Arizona has the potential to move closer and closer to one of those tier one swing states.
Mm-hmm. Let's talk about the Democrats who may have voted in the Republican primary. Were there many of them? Did they make any kind of difference in Michigan, Rick?
Yeah, there are some estimates that maybe 1 in 10 of the primary voters was a Democrat. That would actually be consistent with what we saw in 2000 when, you might remember, John McCain famously dealt an upset to George W. Bush on his path to the Republican nomination. What made it controversial was, you know, well, first of all, the brazenness of the efforts on the part of some Democratic politicos to get Democrats and independents out to meddle in the Republican primaries with email blasts and robocalls and things like that. And just as an aside, I was talking to one tactician who was complaining that there were other interests, he thought crypto Republicans, that were urging those Democrats to vote instead for Ron Paul, effectively trying to tamper with his efforts to tamper with the results of the Republican primary. But then Rick Santorum also jumped into that, and his campaign paid for a robocall that said Democrats should go to the polls and embarrass Mitt Romney by voting for Rick Santorum, because Mitt Romney voted for the Wall Street bailout, but voted again, or not voted for, but supported the Wall Street bailout, but not the auto industry bailout, which is a big issue, as you can imagine, here in Michigan, never mentioning that Rick Santorum also opposed the automotive bailout. And Mitt Romney called that an effort to kidnap the Republican primary.
Professor Espino, all of this is happening with, I don't know how much faith you put in polls, but this survey released yesterday showing consumer confidence is going up. A number more Americans saying that the country is on the right track. Is this really good news for the president, and does it indicate that the Republicans have a pretty rough task ahead of them?
Well, yeah, I mean, if the numbers continue to trend in this direction, it's certainly in President Obama's favor. I mean, we're still going to probably be hitting the November election with unemployment at a non-trivial percentage, and that's something that Republicans will bring up and certainly try to paint the narrative that President Obama has been harmful to the economy. But the indications are that things are starting to move, the economy is starting to improve in a way that's improving for the Democrats, certainly. And so the Republican field, particularly Mitt Romney, is now going to have to paint this narrative. We already hear him in his victory speeches last night, turning the focus onto reminding voters how bad the economy still is. But it's getting harder to do as the economy improves to convince voters that things are still as bad as they were a few years ago.
Rick, what do you think?
I didn't catch the last end of that. Is Michigan going to be a battleground? Is that what you're asking?
No, the question is, because Americans are showing increased confidence in the economy and the direction of the country, is this going to be a difficult race? Is it becoming increasingly more difficult as these primaries go on for the Republicans to take on a race with Obama? Is he becoming more a clear front runner now, Obama?
I don't know if I'd go that far here in Michigan. His negatives still seem to be rather high. But certainly to answer your question, that plainly, the better the economy gets, the better it is for President Obama. There are sort of these suggestions that, 8% is kind of the magic number. And if the national unemployment rate is above 8%, then the president will suffer for it. But if he gets it below 8%, which would still, as the professor pointed out, be a non-trivial number, that he can really argue for some marked success in improving the economy, and that would improve his position. But I assume the same thing is true in Arizona, that there are a lot of other issues out there in terms of the national federal health care reforms. Here in Michigan, there's some concerns about some Great Lakes issues, but the economy just bigfoots all of those.
Right. We'll start taking phone calls for our guests, and we'll do it in just one moment. Here's how you reach us. 800-486-8655. 800-486-8655. The email address is talk@wpr.org. And our guests are Rick Pluta, Managing Editor and Capital Bureau Chief for Michigan Public Radio. Rodolfo Espino is Assistant Professor of Political Science at Arizona State University. Our phone number, 800, again, 486-8655. talk@wpr.org if you'd like to send an email, and we'll be with you momentarily. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program today, a deepening trend toward out-of-wedlock births, particularly for young women who are under the age of 30, where more than half of all births are out of wedlock. Should we be concerned about this? That's what we talk about hour two of our program. Two phone calls now as we analyze the results in Arizona and Michigan, and we start our calls with John in Onalaska. Hi, John.
Hi. It's my understanding that Santorum paid the unions to perform a robocall or something, asking Democratic voters to vote for him. It seems to me that that's a killer issue for Santorum in the future, that Santorum has admitted that the Democrats believe that nominating Santorum is a victory for Obama. Shouldn't Romney mention that in his future talks?
Rick, you want to start?
Sure. And Romney did not wait to until the future to mention that. As a matter of fact, that was a big part of just the furious round of campaigning yesterday. That all kinds of I got phone calls from the Romney campaign offering up surrogates to talk about that issue specifically. Santorum, made an alliance with Democrats who thought he was the weaker candidate in order to try to win. Now, the way that Santorum spun it was he said that it was a plea to conservative Democrats, to blue-collar Democrats, to participate in the Republican primary, and that it was basically doing Ronald Reagan-style coalition building that crossed party lines. Obviously, a lot of people didn't see it that way.
Thank you, John, for the call. Our number is 800-486-8655. Rick Santorum made mention last night, Professor Espino, of John McCain and Jan Brewer, particularly John McCain, who he said had been working tirelessly for him in Arizona and in other places in the country. What did that mean to Arizona voters, and how prominent was John McCain in touting Mitt Romney in Arizona?
I think probably could have been more prominent, but he didn't have to be, given the the numbers here. Romney had always enjoyed a comfortable lead, according to the polls. McCain is still really popular here in Arizona. He's a well-known figurehead for the Republican Party. I think that while important, it wasn't decisive in, giving Romney the victory here in Arizona.
And what about Jan Brewer?
Well, Jan Brewer is an interesting supporter for Romney. He's had to walk a delicate line in terms of courting some controversial figures such as Jan Brewer in the primary, but being sure not to hold him too close come the general election, because Jan Brewer has a lot of negatives, particularly with independent swing voters, and a lot of it's because of actions she's taken since assuming office several years ago. Most notably her, signing the SB 1070, this anti-immigrant legislation has really turned off a lot of Hispanic voters from the Republican Party brand name. But more recently, when Obama visited here in Arizona, the infamous finger wagging in the face of the president really mm-hmm. turned off a lot of voters towards Jan Brewer. But she's still really popular within conservative circles here in Arizona. So this is something that Romney, struggles with, trying to court some of these right-wing ideologues to win the Republican primary, but make sure not to hold them too close come the general election.
How many Hispanic voters were the Republicans able to get to go to the polls in the primary in Arizona?
I didn't see those numbers, but, just the last time I looked at voter registration data, less than 20% of Hispanic voters here in Arizona are registered Republican. Not the numbers aren't there to play a decisive role in the Republican primary. And here in Arizona, we have that for the presidential preference election. It's a closed primary, so it's only registered Republicans that are allowed to participate. So there's no threat of crossover voting like we saw in going on in Michigan.
Uh-huh. Rick, are you surprised that Mitt Romney is not the clear front runner today?
In the national race?
Yes.
No, one of the things that we've seen about primary seasons is that they can go back and forth. You know, remember, was it 4 years ago at this time in the primary season, the Democratic nominee was going to be Hillary Clinton. And, you know, that just turned around. We see a lot of bumps in the road, towards anyone. One of the things, one of the things that's, certainly probably true now more than ever is that money and organization are probably the most critical elements of putting together a campaign. You've got to have a good candidate. You've got to have a candidate who doesn't make the kinds of malapropisms that Mitt Romney seems to be somewhat prone to. But this is a campaign that, by and large, in terms of at least the wheels and gears of it, is very, very well put together, and that's served it well. That said, it's important. It's probably more important than anything else. But it's not the only thing. Did that answer your question?
Yes, it did. And let me ask you the same question, Professor Espino. Are you surprised that Mitt Romney doesn't have this locked up at this point?
No, I think as Rick pointed out, we're still fairly early on in the primary election season. And just as we saw in 2008 in the Democratic primary, there was a lot of changes as each state got to weigh in. And also to keep in mind, too, that the Republican Party restructured the way in which delegate votes are getting allocated, right? So, some of these early states are having a proportional system by which candidates such as Santorum can still eke out some delegate counts into their favor in states like Michigan. However, I should point out that Arizona, we didn't do that. We had a winner-take-all system, which is technically in violation of the Republican Party rules, but this is something that allows the Republican Party primary to be more protracted, extended here in 2012 than we saw in years past.
Mm-hmm. I want to spend a little.
Kathleen, I'm sorry. And
no,
we
it's
should
all right.
also point out that, right now, if at some point in the process, even before, whoever that front runner winds up being, winds up amassing all of the 1,100 something delegates that they need to win the nomination, that stop sleep deprived, collect thoughts. that even long before they win that nomination, it may become clear that someone is headed down that path. But if we reach a situation like we did 4 years ago with the Democrats, where it really looks like every delegate may count, that we could see Republicans going into the convention with a lot of fights over things like, Arizona's apportionment of delegates, which violates the national Republican Party rules, that they don't allow winner-take-all states before March 1st. I believe Florida was also a winner-take-all state. So you could see, a lot of wrangling over, even now, what we think are fairly solid delegate vote counts.
Yeah. Do you see that happening, Professor Espino?
It's a potential, right? But I think it's only going to be an issue if Romney doesn't seal the deal in some of these upcoming elections in March, particularly some of these Super Tuesday states. Georgia's the big one, Tennessee, Virginia, Ohio, right? The potential for that wrangling over violation of rules will be an issue should Romney not have a slam dunk victory come March.
Right.
That's exactly it. And maybe I'm showing a little Midwest bias here, but Ohio is going to be huge in this rivalry. Georgia is important for a whole bunch of reasons, not the least of them just flat out the number of delegates, but also, if Newt Gingrich loses there, then he has, by his own description, lost viability as a national candidate because that's the state that he's from. That would leave Santorum to
try to coalesce that, right, you know, to the right of Romney group behind him, then Ohio becomes a fight over whether, you know, which candidate has the most appeal to the industrial Midwest. We know that Ohio is going to be a battleground state in November. The Republicans would like to make Michigan a battleground state in November, which, you know, it always has been, but it's gone for the Democratic nominee every year since 1988. The Republicans know if they can make it a fight here in Michigan, that that changes the whole electoral landscape. So, mm-hmm, you know, that's some stuff to keep an eye on.
I want to move on to Super Tuesday areas in a moment, but I still am trying to figure out Michigan when it comes to bailout of the auto industry. It would appear that a lot of
welcome
people...
Welcome to the club.
Oh no, I thought you would have all the answers.
Yeah.
It helps so many people. The unemployment rate went down. The big three are thriving at this moment, and I'm having a hard time understanding how the presidential candidates can say it was a horrible idea to bail them out when so many people have benefited in the state of Michigan. So how did the candidates sell their anti-bailout position to Republican voters? How can you be against that?
It was framed this way. The distinction between Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum on this issue is they both opposed the auto bailout. Rick Santorum argued that he was more consistent because Mitt Romney actually favored the Wall Street / bank bailout, but opposed the federal bailout. Their argument was not that GM, you know, and Chrysler didn't need help, but that what the federal government should have done is basically said, you don't get any help, you go immediately into a quick rinse managed bankruptcy, much like, you know, what you wound up doing, and the auto industry today would be stronger for the experience. That's essentially the argument that both Romney and Santorum made vis-a-vis the auto bailout. The problem with that is that question of what would those car companies have done for survival money to get them to the point where they could get to and through that bankruptcy? And if, in fact, it didn't work and one or both of them had gone down, that would have taken a whole supply chain of companies that supply not just GM and Chrysler, but also Ford, which didn't take any bailout money, not to mention a lot of the foreign car companies that are based in other states, including southern states. And so that was sort of where the wrangling came out. And, you know, if you follow the travels of President Obama, he likes to come to Michigan,
right,
to tell that story,
right,
because the reversal of fortune in the auto industry is a good economic story for him to tell. Michigan has a new burgeoning advanced battery industry that's actually centered in the western side of the state, further away from Detroit, a little closer to Wisconsin, that the president likes to come to Michigan to talk about. So, I mean, that was how it was framed, that the Republican candidate said that it wasn't that the auto companies shouldn't have gone into managed bankruptcy, it's they should have done it sooner without taxpayer dollars, which is, by the way, an argument that most Republicans in Michigan buy, that a majority of Republicans in Michigan do and did oppose the bailout of the auto industry. It's the state as a whole that's much more divided on that question.
Mm-hmm. And it was interesting, the president yesterday appeared before the UAW, didn't he? No coincidence that it was the same day as the Michigan primary.
Nice timing for him, yes.
Right. What are your thoughts on this? Do you think this is an issue that the president ought to make front and center as we carry on with a general election, Professor Espino, that the bailout of the auto industry worked and it was a sign of big success from his administration, or would he best not talk about it?
No, I think it's probably, you know, to earn support of those independent voters, I think it's something that he should probably will continue to talk about, and rightly so, because it does appear to be a successful program. But, of course, I think he's going to tie it into a much larger narrative, that a lot of the other things that where he expanded the scope of the federal government, one of the most important ones is, of course, the payroll tax deductions. You know, he's going to be talking about not just the bailout of the auto industry, but the role that the government played just to keep us out of the depths of the recession, or to make it, a potential depression. The one thing that he'll probably not want to talk too much about, though, is the support of the financial industry in terms of that, because that's something that's really unpopular. But support for various programs that affect the lives of blue-collar workers, these so-called breaking Democrats, is certainly something that he's going to be talking about. Mm-hmm. And I think it probably works really well for him.
Our phone number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about the primaries in Michigan and Arizona. This hour of the program with Rick Pluta, Managing Editor, Capital Bureau Chief of the Michigan Public Radio Network, and Professor Rodolfo Espino, Assistant Professor, Political Science, Arizona State University. Lines are open for you. We go to Andy in Lake Geneva next. Hi, Andy.
Hi, Kathleen.
Hi.
You know, the thing about the auto bailout is simply misunderstood. Romney or Santorum, nobody would allow these companies to be liquidated. What Romney's talking about is putting them through a conventional bankruptcy first, okay? If they couldn't raise money from private sources, of course the government could always come in then, or the government could guarantee private investors coming in. Just simply showing up, any idiot can take government money and throw it at something as a first step as opposed to a last step. That's what's going on here, and it's a misunderstanding. Romney's got to get his act together and start explaining it better, but that's what they're talking about. And the reality is that the amount of money that we're underwater, that the government is now underwater in both GM and Chrysler, could have essentially been mitigated if they had followed that first step of linking it to a conventional bankruptcy. Then if there was no private money, bringing in the government to keep them afloat. I'm a turnaround guy. That's the order of it.
All right.
Well, it was a bit more detailed than that. Now, you could argue that, and I'm not an expert on all the details of the bailout, but you could argue that the government or someone should have done more to try to, pull together private investors, and certainly loan guarantees is something that was talked about. But the reason that they went to the bailout, and this is, President Bush says the same thing, is because you couldn't get the private investors to go and put up the money for the car companies, even if the government made those kinds of promises.
Do you want to respond to this, Professor Espino?
I'm sorry. I think that, again, like Rick, I'm not an expert on these issues, but one thing that the caller is bringing up, I think it's important for the point to talk up, is that Romney perhaps does have a more nuanced position than we're hearing in the national dialogue. But part of his problem is presenting this very nuanced position in straight black and white terms that's very digestible for voters. We saw John Kerry suffering from a very similar problem in 2004. Very nuanced policy positions, but the average voter out there needs something in very digestible terms. Are you for it or are you against it? And that's something that Romney, I think, has to develop a way to present these very nuanced policy positions in just a very simplified package.
Mm-hmm. Andy. Mm-hmm.
And he has, is often the case in politics, is Mr. Romney has been terribly, terribly damaged by a line that he never wrote or uttered, and that is the New York Times headline over his op-ed piece back in 2008. I think it was a few years ago, where he argued for a managed bankruptcy. But the headline was, "Let Detroit Go Bankrupt."
Right.
And that gets thrown at him at every turn, and he cannot escape it.
Yeah. Because we're in an age of television and because we see these people on the air every single day and we see every nuance of their behavior. Let's talk about, Professor, you talked about John Kerry. I'm wondering if there are some similarities in the way these two present themselves in their... They don't seem to be able to really connect with people. We hear so much about the warmth of Bill Clinton, the warmth of Rick Santorum, the aloofness and out-of-touch qualities of Romney, and we heard the same about John Kerry. How important are those either real or perceived perceptions of candidates in getting people to vote for them?
Well, I think they're important in that they translate to how much enthusiasm a particular party base has for their candidate. Frankly, right now, it looks like Romney is not generating a whole lot of enthusiasm among the Republican base. In 2004, Democrats weren't very enthusiastic about John Kerry. And it goes back to this thing that we were hearing in 2004 in the national discourse about who would you rather have a beer with? Is it George Bush or John Kerry?
Right.
And in a similar way, here in 2008, who would you rather have a beer with? And it sounds like people just don't want to have that beer with, Republicans don't want to have that beer with Mitt Romney.
You know, it's interesting. I had a chance years ago to see Mitt Romney in another context, and that's when his father, a former governor of Michigan, died. George Romney's body lay in state in the rotunda of the state capitol and was available for... It was an event that was open to the public. And the day that they did it, Mitt Romney and one of his brothers stationed themselves at the end of the line to shake hands with every single person who showed up to pay respects to their father. And, I mean, it was clear that, you know, he's a considerate man. He's also, at least in terms of his dealing, you know, with the public, is rather courtly. And formal, and you know, like the good professor just said, that a lot of times elections kind of turn on who you'd rather have a beer with.
We don't like courtly candidates.
I think that it can, it can come off as aloof. Although, you know, you've also got to be, you know, careful that. Bill Clinton enjoyed great success, but there were people who were skeptical of that too. I mean, remember Slick Willie?
Sure.
That people thought that he was just a little. You know, there was the group of people who thought that he was just a little too glib.
Right. I mean, it's gone so far. I was watching analysis last night, and one of the commentators was saying that he didn't even believe that Mitt Romney listened to radio in this country. And if you don't listen to radio, conservative radio and all kinds of radio, you're not in touch with, you know, the masses of Americans. And I was sitting on the couch going, right, of course you got to listen to the radio. But they've classified him as being so courtly, so rarefied, that he kind of lives in another world that we just, this isn't a part of our world. Is that way over the top?
Well, it perhaps it is, but did you see the video that went viral of Mitt Romney speaking in what I assume is impeccable French to a French audience when he was leading the U.S. Olympics in Utah?
No, I haven't seen that.
Well, it was just, you know, just one more example of, you know, of just that, you know, this, he's aloof. He speaks French.
Professor Espino?
It's certainly something that I think that his campaign is not going to make a whole lot of hay out. You know, we don't like the French. It's not part of American political culture. It's part of American political culture to dislike that old Europe. They're going to downplay a lot of that stuff, and they're not going to say, look, we have this, you know, highly cultured, highly educated individual running for the Republican nomination. That's not certainly something that's going to play in his favor. And it's other things that Mitt Romney might have to play down, and certainly hanging over his head, is the amount of wealth he has, the tax rate that he's paying that's really out of step from what the average American voter is paying.
Mm-hmm.
These are certainly things that are not playing in Romney's favor. And it's something that can hurt a potential candidate like Romney. I mean, I think you look at back at 2008, there was that thing that John McCain could not escape, was him forgetting how many homes he owned, not really knowing, right? And in a similar fashion, fast forward to 2012, this level that of wealth that Romney enjoys that few of us can even understand or grasp what that must be like is something that he has to downplay and run away from.
In a Republican primary, no less, which was kind of interesting, and he was never able to pivot off it. He was never able to jujitsu that issue of how much he paid in taxes. That his line, and I can't speak as to exactly why, but it must have been in his delivery, that his line about, you know, I pay all my taxes, all the taxes I have to pay, and not a penny more.
Right.
And for some reason, that just always fell flat.
Uh-huh.
Imagine if Herman Cain had said that.
Uh-huh.
And how the audiences and the people, you know, might have reacted.
Right. Well, and this...
it's entirely a guess on my part, but I think it would have been a lot different.
I think you're right. I can't help but believe that the Democrats, if Romney is the candidate, are going to hammer him on that issue and the money in offshore accounts. I just can't imagine that's not going to be a big deal come the general election.
Oh, Democrats are already hammering on it. That my email inbox is filled on a daily basis with on some days more than 100 emails that focus typically on Mitt Romney's shortcomings as a candidate, a politician, and a human being.
Oh, my goodness. Is that because you're in Michigan and you had a primary, or is that number going to continue as the weeks go on?
I can't compare it to the experience of political reporters, in, you know, being a political reporter in another state, but... You know, it's pretty easy to send someone an email.
Yeah. How do you think Romney should be dealing, Professor Espino, with the fact that he's got a heck of a lot of money?
Part of it is just framing it, you know, in a way that is not looking that doesn't paint himself as something so removed from the average American voter's life. You know, I think he's going to have to roll up his sleeves. Do a lot of visual ads out there that they're going to show that he, you know, he can chop wood and mow grass himself. Right? it's going to require a lot of work, and he's probably going to have to rely on a lot of his super PAC friends to paint his opponents in a more negative light than he's getting painted in at the moment.
Yeah.
It's really interesting to me, but, you know, in the not-too-distant past, before he became a presidential candidate, I mean, Mitt Romney was kind of an American hero, that he was considered a big success story, that he had shown how, you know, you could chart a middle course through a political minefield in Massachusetts, where he was a Republican governor and working with a Democratic legislature. I mean, remember when Romney Care was actually a positive?
Yes, and I vaguely remember that.
Yeah, and then he went on to rescue the Salt Lake City Olympics, and he was a white knight. And, you know, here we are at this juncture today where people make fun of him for talking about the height of the trees in Michigan.
Well, you got to admit it was a very strange thing to say. In a way, it was kind of sweet. I think he takes too much grief for that. You know, it's just, oh, you look at the height of the trees. Well, whatever that means, it's all right.
But, you know, everything can be, you know, can be used against you. And it was,
right,
it was an odd line. And it wasn't a throwaway line. It was part of his regular speech. And then, you know, after he came and made a couple of appearances in Michigan and used it, it became... You know, every Sunday morning political talk show talked about what did he mean
right.
by talking about the height of the trees.
I know, it's a good question. What did he mean? The other thing, Professor Espino, when he talked, and I don't know if he just lives in this world that we don't have any idea of what it would be like to make that much money, but the comment about his wife, you would have thought that he would have thought politically, well, it's okay to say she drives a Cadillac, but she drives two Cadillacs. And I'm wondering, maybe I'm thinking this is too big a thing. Maybe a lot of people think, wow, I wish I could drive a couple Cadillacs. But you would think that politically it would behoove him to say, it would be okay to say she drives a Cadillac. Why would he say two?
Yeah, there's a lot of things that Romney has had gaffes on that reveals a little too much about his wealth. And that's something that probably his handlers have to socialize him, train him a little. Hey, Mitt, you back off on some of these things that you think are normal, because it's not normal for, again, the average American voter out there to have two Cadillacs.
Right. All right, let's welcome more phone calls. Our number is 800-486-8655. We're talking about Michigan and Arizona, the primaries yesterday. This hour, our guests are Rodolfo Espino, Assistant Professor, Political Science at Arizona State University, and Rick Pluta, Managing Editor and Capital Bureau Chief of Michigan Public Radio Network. I'm Kathleen Dunn on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Hour two of our program this Wednesday, the large number of young women who are having babies without being married. And when you look at the under 30 group, it's over half of the births in this country. So that's significant. I'm not sure how, but we'll figure out how during the next hour. And a reminder that Senator George McGovern is with us tomorrow at 10 o'clock. He's written a new book. He's going strong at the age of 89. And he's written, let me get the correct title here. It's in front of me, What It Means to Be a Democrat. George McGovern tomorrow. All right, back to phone calls. Paul in Merrill. Hi, Paul.
Hello, Kathleen. Thank you. In 1633, the Catholic Church put Galileo on trial for his heretical or apparently heretical views about the Earth going around the sun. But there was really not a lot at stake in terms of immediate consequences of that position. But I'm wondering what your guests think about the uniform denial of global warming on the part of the Republican candidates, and whether they actually believe that nonsense, or whether they are responding to, I don't know, whatever it is, the stupidity of the masses.
Rick, you want to start?
It wasn't really central to this that certainly in Michigan, I don't know about Arizona, that energy policy was a pretty big argument. Part of it was just because, you know, the Keystone Pipeline controversy is so current. And Rick Santorum, you know, certainly, you know, seems to, I can't speak to what is in these men's heads. Rick Santorum said that he does not believe in man-made global warming. You know, Mitt Romney has made noises in that direction, and usually it gets a lot of applause when they bring it up. Is it sincere? Is it insincere? I don't know, but Republicans who show up at rallies seem to believe.
Let's go to Bob, and we're getting short on time, from Harvard. Hi, Bob.
Hi, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
In my opinion, Mitt Romney's, he's been cast already, and that mold's been thrown away. How do you, short of wiggling your nose like the Bewitched sitcom and changing himself, how does it? I mean, the die is set. You know, we know what this guy is like. And as far as the global warming and Santorum and various Republicans, their thought that it's just hoo-ha, boy, are they naive.
Professor, thank you. Thanks for the call. Professor Espino.
So the question is just how can Mitt Romney reshape himself, change his image? And I believe the caller is absolutely right that, you know, a lot of what, you know, how we perceive Mitt Romney has already been set in stone. To change that, though, is going to require a lot of work on Romney's part. And it's going to require a lot of campaign resources, probably not so much trying to recast himself, but deflect the attention onto his general election opponent should he secure the nomination, that being President Obama. Try to put more of the attention, the narrative, and the focus on him rather than himself. The reason that we're hearing so much about Romney and who he is, and, you know, the amount of wealth he has, is because it's the Republican primary that we're focusing on, and so we're hearing more about the front runner. Come the general election, we're going to probably hear a lot more about Barack Obama's fate.
Mm-hmm. Well, gentlemen, thank you so much, Rick. I hope you can have a nap this afternoon. That would be fun, wouldn't it?
It would be nice, but I think I've still got a busy day ahead of me.
Maybe tomorrow you can have a nap.
Maybe tomorrow.
Thank you both very much for your analysis this hour. Thank you, Rick. Thank you, Professor Espino.
Thank you.
Our guest this hour, Professor Rodolfo Espino, who's Assistant Professor of Political Science at Arizona State University, and Rick Pluta, who is Managing Editor and Capital Bureau Chief of Michigan Public Radio, Network, rather, joining us this hour to talk about what happened in the primaries yesterday in Arizona. No surprise, in Arizona and in Michigan, where, in case you have no idea what happened, Mitt Romney did win, but it was close, 3 percentage points. So we'll do another one of these after Super Tuesday next week, when there will be lots and lots and lots to talk about. Thanks to Rhonda Fanning for producing the hour, and thanks to Rhonda as well for on-air production here in our downtown Milwaukee studios. Another hour coming up, so please stay with us.